So Abram asks, how do I know that I'll possess the land? And God replies to him, bring me a heifer 3 years old, and a female goat 3 years old, and a ram 3 years old, and a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. And he brought him all these, cut them in half, and laid each half over against the other. But he did not cut the birds in half. And when the birds of prey came down on the carcasses, Abram drove them away. And you're thinking, this is a really strange answer to Abram's question. He says, how do I know I'm going to get this land? And God says, bring me all these animals and cut them up. As the sun was going... We'll get into that more. As the sun was going... I'm not just leaving you to wonder. Well, I am for a few minutes, but... As the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell on Abram. And behold, dreadful and great darkness fell upon him. Then the Lord said to Abram, know for certain that your offspring will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs, and will be servants there, and they will be afflicted for 400 years. But I will bring judgment on the nation that they serve, and afterward they shall come out with great possessions. As for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace. You shall be buried in a good old age, and they shall come back here in the fourth generation. For the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. The Amorites were part of the people who were living in the land at the time. When the sun had gone down and it was dark, behold, a smoking fire pot and a flaming torch passed between these pieces, that is, the pieces of the animals. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your offspring I give this land. From the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates, the land of all the people currently living in it. I'm just summarizing that part. So here's the third part that we see. God establishes covenant with us. Covenant is this idea of a promise or a commitment. It's something that is usually formal and very binding. Typically how this would work is that two parties would agree on terms with each other for whatever it is they're committing to with one another. Probably one of the most common places that we would still hear the word covenant is in the idea of marriage. Two parties coming together, making a commitment to each other. And there are certain terms that they both agree to when they enter into that commitment. In this time and in this culture, one of the ways that they would kind of seal this was by the ceremony, where they would bring these animals and they would cut them in half, and there would be this, they would separate the halves and there would be this nice bloody gorge in between. And what the two parties of the covenant would do is they would walk through that bloody pass in between the animals. And it was their way of saying, if I don't uphold my side of the agreement, then what is to happen to me is to be the same as what has happened to these animals. So it's not something you really enter into lightly. It's not something that you take without a good degree of seriousness.
A little more than a handshake.
Yeah, it's a little more than a handshake. A little more than a verbal agreement.
And still practiced in some religions.
Yeah. So this is what would happen. These parties would agree to this, and this is what they would do. What do you notice about this story? Given that information about how this ritual is played out, does anything strike you as missing? Abram didn't walk through it. Why do you think that is?
He already knew God.
He already knew God, but this wasn't about knowing God.
God didn't ask him to.
God himself went through it.
Yeah, God went through it.
God wasn't requiring anything of Abraham.
I don't think Abraham would have been able to keep it.
Abraham didn't have a son yet. His promises hadn't been given.
Well, I think in this passage, though, we're seeing that God is giving promises to him. That's what the whole heart of the covenant is. Abram is asking, how do I know? And God is saying, this is how you will know. Because I'm promising it. And so, God doesn't ask Abram to walk through. And it could be that it's because all God is requiring of Abram is his faith. It could be that God knows Abram can't possibly uphold this deal. I mean, how long would it take any of us before we found some way to break this covenant with God?
He didn't. He felt blameless. I mean, God made him feel blameless. 7:1.
Marianne.
I just gotta be myself with this one. Okay. We're here other than knowing what the culture said, that somebody has to walk through it. Where does it here, if I'm reading this without knowing that culture, how do I know that God walked through it? It doesn't say anybody walked through it, does it?
Okay.
How do I know God walked
sure.
through it?
Sure.
I like what you're saying, and it makes sense to me, but how do I know that here?
Okay. So, in verse 17, when the sun had gone down and it was dark, behold, a smoking fire pot and a flaming torch passed between these pieces. Okay, so that, I mean, that's a very nondescript thing. But for the people, and this is part of what we need to keep in mind as well, that the original audience for Genesis would have been the Israelite people after they had come out of Egypt. Mm-hmm. And how did God lead the people out of Egypt?
Yep, that makes sense.
Well, as a pillar of fire and a pillar of smoke.
Yep, that makes sense to me.
So for them, this was a clear picture of God. Mm-hmm. And in the story, God and Abram are the only two people who are really a part of what's going on. But that's a good question. We wouldn't, if we didn't piece that together, mm-hmm. we wouldn't know.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so we understand that this is God making this commitment. And he demonstrates his complete faithfulness to his word and his plan. Because God is saying, if I don't do this, this is what's to happen to me. Now, we think of that happening to God, and it's like, well, how could that happen? And maybe that's part of the point. Is God is saying, I'm so committed, I'm willing to do this. And maybe here what we're seeing too, that as Abram, not just being who he is, but knowing that the promise means that Abram is going to be a representative for all of humanity, that all of these children are going to come, that these nations are going to come, and ultimately part of God's promise entails Abram being a blessing for the whole world. I don't think it's a far leap here to see Abram as a representative of all humanity.
Absolutely.
And so I think it's perfectly valid to say God recognizes there is no way you can walk through this and keep my commandments. There's no way that you can uphold the covenant, but because I am so committed to you and so committed to seeing all of creation redeemed to the state that it fell from, I am going to do this. And it doesn't require anything from you other than your faith. And so it's impossible for us to receive the blessing that God is promising on the basis of anything other than his promise. Because we can also never say, well, I walked through, so I'm entitled to.
I just want to say, wow. That's pretty awesome.
And the other thing that I would say is this. Because we know where the story is leading, when God says, the length I'm willing to go to see humanity and creation redeemed is I'm willing to become like these animals, violently killed, sacrificed. The covenant comes through blood. I don't think it's wrong to see foreshadowing of where the story is heading.
It's also really cool that God was very gracious and he told him about what's going to happen to his people.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah.
You know, what's going to happen to my family in 10 years, 100 years, you know?
Right.
But he laid out a lovely tapestry picture.
He left out a few details, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, how do you do it in that little bit of time? But the big stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll see next week how this is taking place. That Abram's descendants are going to be 400 years in a place that they don't end up wanting to be in.
Right.
But God's faithful to his promise.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'm going to bring you back to this land.
I think one of the interesting things is that, you know, talking about faith and that ability to question, is that even in the midst of Abraham's faith, he asks, and God answers. Like, God doesn't question his faith, doesn't say, well, just don't worry about it. But he goes to the extent of this depth of promise, even in the midst of asking questions. So that even with us asking questions now, God is still willing to go to great depths to show us answers. So, questioning is not lack of faith. Questioning enhances our faith.
Mm-hmm. I look at Abram. He was sitting there minding his own business. He didn't ask for this. Someone comes along and asks him to do this, and he just goes ahead and does it. And when he gets into this covenant, it wasn't like he said, this is what I'd like, and God said, okay. So it's kind of a one-sided covenant to begin with, because it was kind of all God's idea. But it's amazing how he went along with it. Really didn't ask many questions, because I know I would have had a whole lot more questions than he had. And this was after he'd already done a lot. I mean, you know, he's gone along with it. So I'm amazed at the faith that he did have. And it was really repaid. I mean, God repaid it. Paid it ahead. I mean, he was paying it before Abraham had the faith, really.
Yeah.
Well, God came to Abraham in visions. I mean, God never... He wasn't a burning bush like with Moses. You know, he came to him in visions. But he came to him in visions from an early start, from what I understand.
We have... Yeah, I mean, there are different stories, different ways God has come. There's a...
It says, you know, everybody in the tribe, all the part of where he came from, which Amorites, I believe it is.
Yeah, Amorites were part of the ones living in the land.
They didn't believe... They believed in many gods.
Right, yeah, they were part of the
Abraham was the only one that believed in one God, because the one God
had come to him.
Kept on coming to
yeah.
him. You know, and it's like, how are you going to refute that? They keep on coming to you in your visions. There's a difference between dreams and visions.
Right. Nate, you had...
This blows my mind how God even cared. While he's... goes through the trouble of, like, having Abraham kill cows and cut them in half, and then he's, like, walking through this ditch with blood and stuff with this guy named Abraham.
Not yet.
And
Abram.
And, yeah, soon to be. And while this is going on, while he's walking through this ditch, there's galaxies. that are doing all kinds of who knows what, billions of miles away, that he also formed and is making them go and do what they do. And here he is in a ditch.
With
this guy. And I'm just asking, why? Why? Why did you even have to... Just questions. Why did you even have to do it? You could do anything. I don't know. I mean... It's just... I don't know.
Mind-boggling.
It is. It's very mind-boggling.
And I think it takes us back to, what we were talking about last week, that we can so easily miss when we stop to really think how big God is. Mm. And big isn't even a word that does it justice. But then that personal nature that he would come, that he would do that he would make this promise, this covenant with this guy that, yeah, really didn't have anything invested necessarily. I mean,
all Abram could give him was obedience, mm-hmm. or a try, because he really didn't have anything else that God needed or wanted.
Well, he did. Abraham had to do what he did, or the prophecy of Jesus
obedience.
Never have.
All he had to offer was obedience.
Right. He had to be. Of course, he was the firstborn descendant all the way from Noah through.
As well as Adam and Eve.
Huh?
As well as from Adam and Eve.
Right, but Noah was the last one.
So the redemption, it all comes down to redemption. And God promised to make it right.
The groundwork for the final.
I kind of look at it, God created us in his own image. Okay? We have a master plan. There isn't anything out there that isn't created like him. Period.
Right.
There could be aliens that have big heads and three eyes, it doesn't matter. There's only one creation that was created like him. And that's what was promised. Now, it got screwed up somehow because of the stupid serpent. Okay? And our inability to be able to process, who God the Father was and take his word. Don't take his word for granted.
And that's the story that we're looking at.
Exactly. So the continual, the whole continual process, even all the way through the New Testament, is how the redemption is going to happen.
You can drive yourself crazy, but you keep asking questions and the answers aren't there, but they are there.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of layers we can look at the story, and we the more questions we ask, the more we peel back, the more questions we're kind of left with.
Absolutely.
But I think again, it comes back down to our faith in God, believing who He is and what He's done, and that He is the one who comes to us. He initiates this for us, and He establishes His promise with us. And so let's look at the fourth component of this in Genesis 17. When Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to Abram and said to him, I am God Almighty. Walk before me and be blameless, that I may make my covenant between me and you and may multiply you greatly. Then Abram fell on his face, and God said to him, Behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be the father of a multitude of nations. No longer shall your name be called Abram, but your name shall be Abraham. For I have made you the father of a multitude of nations. I will make you exceedingly fruitful, and I will make you into nations, and kings shall come from you. And I will establish my covenant between me and you and your offspring after you throughout their generations for an everlasting covenant, to be God to you and to your offspring after you. And I will give to you and to your offspring after you the land of your sojournings, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession. And I will be their God. So this is where the name change comes. And so the last component here is that God produces change in us. We we see that since the time of Abram first responding to God's call, 24 years have passed. That's a long time. I mean, 24 years, especially when you're 75, when this starts, I would imagine that seems like a long time. And God had first announced that blessing 24 years ago. And he and his wife, Sarai, who also gets a name change to Sarah, still did not have a son, despite some of their best efforts to help God out. But even in the midst of this, Abram was still largely faithful to what God had promised. And so God comes to confirm his covenant to Abram again, and this time he changes Abram's name. We mentioned a little bit last week when we were talking about God, about the significance of names. To this culture, names were everything. Names had great meaning to them. And that meaning was often understood to have some connection with a person's identity and a person's destiny. The name Abram means exalted father, which is fitting, but again kind of ironic in that he had lived with this name for 99 years and had no kids, again with the exception of one little side trip. But that was not a part of God's promise. And so God comes in and he changes his name to mean father of many or father of a multitude. And we can see that here just in the language God uses with him. And we come to understand that the blessing, the change that God is working in Abram, isn't just that he's going to be the father of a son, physically, biologically, who will become a great nation, although that happens. But remember, through all of this, God's intent is to redeem all of creation and restore the image of man that was corrupted at the fall. And so this blessing, this promise of being a father of many, isn't just many biological descendants, but as we read from Romans earlier, the father of anyone who would have faith like Abraham had. And that it was through that redemption would come. It's also, the name change is also a confirmation that who Abram is and the path that his life takes becomes something completely new in the hands of God. He very easily could have said no back in Ur. I mean, he had the choice of whether or not to respond to God. How would his life have been different? I mean, we can only guess, right? But I think it goes without saying that responding to God, saying yes to him, produces a change in us and takes us in a direction we could never imagine otherwise. I don't think Abram could have conceived when he was in Ur that someday he would have ventured through this land and received this promise to have this huge inheritance of land and of people and of being a source of blessing to the whole world. That's not something we can do. But when we respond in faith to what God has initiated, he can take our lives and our legacy and even history in a totally new direction that accomplishes his good purposes.
It's kind of cool. It's very cool. It's perfectly cool that after Abraham and Sarah tried to accomplish this, God didn't give them up. And we tend to easily give up and say, we sometimes can live faith kind of like people do on a diet, you know? And so like, I'm gonna do differently, I'm gonna eat differently, and then Saturday night comes and you go out to dinner and you have butter with lobster and blah, 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 and then Sunday comes, you go, oh, what the heck? you know, I'll just start on Monday. You know, and we're kind of like that. Well, they took control, but God was faithful. And I love that. I know you skipped over it a little bit, but I think it's extremely important because Abraham wasn't perfectly obedient.
Right.
But God was faithful.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful.
Yeah. And I mean, again, there are a lot of stories that we just don't have the time, you know, to touch on. But read these stories in between and you'll see that there are some very human moments. Some very not glorious human moments. And I think in that we still have maybe even a greater testimony of the change that God does. And this continues throughout the whole book, that, you know, God takes these people who aren't really the people we would consider to be the best candidates for God to use in doing something great, and he uses them, and he changes them, and he makes them into people who become part of this legacy that without them, redemption wouldn't be possible. So a year after this happens, we see that a son is finally born to a woman who's 90 years old and has been barren all of her life.
I cannot imagine.
Did you say that's cruelty?
I'm sorry, but this is a little humoring.
We see as Isaac, whose name means laughter, and there's a story behind that as well. Because when Sarah first heard this promise, she just laughed. She's like, "That's not going to happen." But, you know, Isaac grows and he receives the promise. God comes to him and assures him that that covenant is going to pass on. And so Isaac and his wife, Rebecca, who also is unable to have kids, ends up pregnant with twins. And the way God does this whole changing our expectations on their head, we see that traditionally blessing and honor and privilege comes to the firstborn. And even when you've got twins, one of them has to be born first. But God reverses it. And so the younger ends up getting the blessing. Not in a totally honorable way. Jacob has his issues. Jacob has quite a few issues. We see that he's a swindler. He cheats his brother out of his birthright. He cheats his brother out of his father's blessing. And it's when he is running for his life that God comes to him and says, "I'm going to pass this covenant on to you." Probably not the way we would have planned it. But God seems to know what he's doing. And in the years that Jacob is away, he's changed. And he comes back, and on his return trip home, he has another encounter with God that's very physical. And God changes his name to Israel, which means strives with God. And it becomes a very appropriate label for all of the people who will come out of that nation that bears his name. People who strive with God. And so God's promise is at work, and we see that Jacob has 12 sons, and those 12 sons become the representatives of this nation that is going to be born. And Jacob shows favor, again, not to the firstborn, but to one of the youngest sons. And this causes some trouble in the family. And so the brothers get together, and they decide, let's sell Joseph into slavery and get rid of him. And so Joseph is hauled off into Egypt, and in the midst of a time where you think there couldn't be faith, there couldn't be anything good that comes from this, God comes in and he changes the situation. And he puts Joseph in a position of authority that allows him to save all of Jacob's family in a time of famine. And the whole family, who numbers at least 70 by this point, gets brought to Egypt and cared for and protected so that God's plan can continue. And they're not the things that we would expect. They're not the ways we would understand God to work. But God produces change in us. And there's one more change that I feel is worth mentioning before we close out Genesis. Yes, I just breezed through the rest of the book that quickly. You were probably wondering when we were going to pick up the pace.
You had me for a minute there. But...
In this long series of reversing birthrights and God using the least likely of candidates to accomplish his purposes, we come to this point as we're closing the book and as we see that of everyone else in the family, with all their faults and all the stupid decisions they make and all the ways they turn from God, we feel like there's that glimpse, okay, Joseph has it together. This is the guy God's going to use. Because he remains faithful. He has integrity in places where the rest of his family certainly didn't. And so when it's time for the blessing to continue, it makes perfect sense that blessing and that covenant is going to come to Joseph. Guess what? It doesn't. It comes to one of Joseph's brothers named Judah, who has a very colorful story that you will find in, is it chapter 38? We won't get into all the details, but it's not G-rated. And it's Judah that receives this blessing that the covenant is going to come through. God told Abraham early on that kings are going to come from you. The kings come from the line of Judah. Eventually, the King of Kings comes from the line of Judah. And so we see even here, God is still taking what we expect to happen, and he changes it and turns it and uses it for his purposes in ways that we could never imagine. And so I want to encourage you that as we move through this part of the story, you consider, we talked last week, how it's important to understand we connect with the story, that these truths that we see God working in Abraham's life are things he continues to work in our lives today, that he initiates redemption for us. He comes to us first. He sent his son for us before we were even close to being on this earth. And he wants to initiate that relationship and bring us back into the place where we belong with him. We see that he requires faith from us. He calls us to believe in him and to believe him, to trust in his word and to hold to him even when our circumstances don't make sense, like they didn't to Abraham. They didn't to Joseph. And when the world gives a different message, when all the odds of the natural seem against us, we still are called to believe. God establishes his covenant with us. The covenant that we enter into now is secured through the body and blood of Jesus. And again, that's where all of this is pointing. It's the ultimate sign of God's faithfulness, that trust that we can have that he is worthy of his word. And that although he never broke that covenant that he made with Abram or anyone else, he still took upon himself the curse that was due for breaking that covenant just to make sure that we were redeemed and that the blessing came through Abraham's offspring to the whole world. And again, God produces change in us, and that this is really his goal. That he's working to bring back that image. He still wants us to be his representatives. He still wants us to share in his rule and authority over creation. And that requires that image that he created all of us in to be clean and to be made new. And when we join him in that, he has a new identity and a new destiny for us. How about that? It's not even bad. Where do you feel you most connect with Abraham's story? Again, we didn't cover all of it tonight. But where do you see yourself maybe in his journey? Where do you connect with some of what he went through?
Sometimes it's the part where he was told to go to a place and wasn't given any directions. Sometimes I feel that way in life. Just wonder, where is this life going? Where is my life going? What am I doing? Why am I, trying to follow God? Sometimes really, really, really wrestling with him about, because my life doesn't look like I always thought it would look like. In some ways, it is so much better than I ever thought. In other ways, I struggle. But at the same time, there's not a doubt in my mind that God is leading us.
Well, we're closing in on our time. Just a couple things I want to mention. The bottom of page 3 has a portion that I wasn't necessarily planning to get to tonight because I knew that we had to cover the other stuff, but I encourage you to look at it. There's a great story and a difficult story in Genesis chapter 22 about Abraham and Isaac that I believe is probably the clearest picture of the gospel that we see in all of Genesis. And I encourage you to take a look at that and some of these other references there that show us how in this story God is pointing very directly toward what he is going to do to fulfill his covenant promise. And then again, on the back of that page 4, you'll find your 5-day reading guide for a chance to take a look at some of the stories that we didn't cover and reflect on how those impact you. So I hope you gotten something out of tonight. Let me pray for us one more time, and you'll be free to go.